Hey guys, most of you know me. I'm Donna Cease. I'm the Spiritual Programs Coordinator, and congratulations to all of you on completing the, I almost said Light of the Path Retreat, Discovering Buddhism. And I just want to let you all know that on the very night, last night, in case you were thinking of skipping the practice night, you don't want to do that because we're going to have a little party to celebrate that you all have accomplished such a wonderful thing to complete 2 years of Discovering Buddhism, or however long since you started coming. So that's, I think, in 2 weeks? Yeah, 2 weeks. Yeah, so be here or be square.
Doesn't rhyme, but...
I had one short announcement. We usually say that in order to access the streaming and the audio recordings of these teachings, you need to be a member, and those are no longer, when you go to our website, those are not no longer in the member only web page. They're not no longer. They are no longer in the member only area of our website. In other words, you don't have to be a member to access them. That was an easier way to say it. Most of you are members, so this is irrelevant. But someone out there. So that's nice. So they're available. And so when we get started again in September, the next round of all of this, the new students will have those available to them. I think that was my only announcement. We're starting half an hour earlier, I think, 6:30. Go 6:30 to 8:30, then the party's at 8:30. Okay? Okay, Don? Okay. Yeah. Any other questions? It'd be nice to have these two guys talk about Module 14, which is the practice module. Do you know anything about that? No. Who? We should get her to talk about it. The last module. The 14th. There are two people.
But I mean, since they started DB as a course, there's only been one student. Or up until.
What's the point of this module?
It's. I'll go get the list. I mean, it's. Amazing. Talk to Steve. You need all 14, don't you, to get this? I'm pretty sure. I may have said something, but that doesn't mean it's correct. My understanding is you would go to the Discovering Buddhism site and see what it says. And I'll look it up, too. We'll find out. Any other unanswerable questions? Okay, thank you.
Let's start out by just a couple, maybe five or ten minutes of meditation, and then we'll do some prayers, and then we'll go from there. People here know how to do simple mindfulness of the breath. That's really what I'm asking you to do. Just bring your mind, settle your mind down, whatever it takes. cancel in in a moment. Excuse me. We'll do the refuge and bodhicitta prayer and the things that we need to be we need to recall, remind ourselves of before we do these is a couple of points. And the term excuse me I'm getting ready for Lama Zopa. It clears his throat a lot. But the point, you know, the word mindfulness in the text on mind and mental factors, there's this 51 minds and mental factors, and there's a specific definition of mindfulness, and it means recollection. Like it's like memory. We need to recollect certain aspects of the Dharma. Like, as much as we can, we need to recollect all the Dharma. But when we do these prayers, we need to at least recollect a few things that are important. For example, refuge prayer, we need to recollect or be mindful of the first thing is called fear or dread. Dread sounds more politically correct, but it's a healthy kind of fear, the kind of fear that keeps us from running red lights and you know, doing stupid stuff. And it really is, you know, the texts say fear of rebirth in the lower realms, but that doesn't usually get us thinking seriously about what we're talking about. And the real cause of rebirth in the lower realms is a mind that's pervaded by greed and hatred and ignorance. And we know what that is. So we have in our mind the seeds to be reborn in a really difficult place. But we have those seeds every day in our mind that cause us suffering and that cause us misery. So, you know, having some dread going forward from now to the time we die, that, you know, that with the kind of mind we have, we're going to have a difficult time. Life is not going to go well for us. We're going to get older. We're going to get sick. And we're all going to die. And we have to confront every one of those sort of major categories of potential suffering. And then all day, every day, you know, meeting with problems again and again, separating from things that we find attractive again and again. Nothing lasts. Everything is impermanent. It's unsatisfactory. So that kind of healthy dread of not necessarily the circumstances, but having the kind of mind we have that's out of control, that doesn't know how to maintain its composure, maintain some sort of basic state of happiness as we deal with these difficulties that are coming. So again, refuge is based on this healthy dread or fear of the consequences of living with an uncontrolled mind. And it's also based on confidence, or the you know, which is the politically correct way to say faith. And it really is both, you know. Confidence, faith, you know, they're not exactly the same thing. And sometimes people they don't like the word faith in Buddhism, but you know, it is something that's based on reasoning. It's not like a blind faith. And yet there are things in Buddhism that we cannot prove. 100% cannot prove karma. Can't prove rebirth. 100%. We don't remember our past lives. At least most of us. Some people might. But most of us probably don't. Now, eventually it said that we can validate every one of these teachings directly when we evolve far enough along in our spiritual evolution, but we're not there. So we have to take these teachings on faith. There's some faith involved. Faith in the Buddhas, enlightened beings, their teachings, and the spiritual community. You know? And that takes time. That's a lifetime practice. Because we start out, even at the beginning as a Buddhist, you know, we might take refuge and go through a little ceremony. But that's just the beginning. I mean, we don't really have heart, we don't have strong faith because we don't have strong realizations to base it on. But our faith grows over time as our experience of the Dharma grows over time. Our experience of dread and fear of a wild, uncontrolled mind and the consequences of living with that, and our confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, that they really can teach us the methods to completely transform our mind from a state of chaos, whatever your mind is right now, to a state that's completely free of suffering and capable of doing everything necessary to help others, called enlightenment. That kind of faith. Really, that's really what we're talking about. So refuge is based on these two crucial factors. And then sometimes it's also said it's based, particularly in the Mahayana refuge, it's based on compassion for ourselves and for others. You know, we want to develop ourselves so we can stop our own suffering and so we can help others stop their suffering. We can guide them, we can inspire them, we can lead them, we can do whatever we need to do to help stop the suffering of living beings. So this is these three things, dread or fear, faith or confidence, and compassion. We need to be mindful of these three things every time we take refuge, so that we're just not like, you know, saying a bunch of meaningless words. Without an awareness, without mindfulness of these three things, refuge has no power. It doesn't have any, it doesn't move our heart. It doesn't have any juice. And in bodhicitta, the other part of this little formula that we recite, through the practice of giving and the other perfections. So, you know, may we become a Buddha to liberate all sentient beings or free all sentient beings. But bodhicitta is the heart of the Maya practice. It's, in essence, is that we set our sights on eliminating all of our faults, which takes a huge amount of work. It will not happen. We won't wake up tomorrow and have this be our experience. We've been through too many days in our lives where we know tomorrow is going to look a lot like today because of the continuity of our mind. But we do have something to say about how we evolve. Are we going to evolve in a more selfish, self-centered way and have more suffering? Or are we going to evolve in a more selfless, compassion-driven way? Yeah. So bodhicitta is this we set our goal on our intention. You know, our mind is and it's a heartfelt intention. It's not wishy-washy, it's not sentimentality, it's sincere wish to help liberate every single sentient being, everybody. Even our enemies, even the people we don't know, even the people we'll never meet, the sentient beings that we'll never meet. But it's an attitude that we want to guide them from whatever state of confusion they're in now to supreme happiness, supreme enlightenment. And how do we do that? We practice. We purify our mind of obstacles. We cultivate positive qualities in our mind. We plant the seeds of virtue in our mind. And, you know, just coincidentally, this course on Tantra is the fastest way to do that, the most powerful way to do that. Simply because we're accessing the subtlest, most powerful level of consciousness. And we're using that mind to meditate on these profound truths, these profound points of the Dharma. Let's keep this in mind, and we'll do the refuge and bodhicitta prayer, which is on page 34. We'll do that. And the refuge bodhicitta, four measurables, seven them, and then short mandala offering. Now hopefully everybody knows what these prayers mean by now. But maybe you don't. I just talked about refuge and bodhicitta now. But the four measurables, you know, have to do with, you know, love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Alright, so we'll do this. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Reverently, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon, I imagine this is a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratnam Mandala Kamnayata Yami. I want to talk a little bit about the term compassion, because we throw it around like a basketball, and like, you know, and there's definitions to it, right? There's words we use to define it. But what does it mean? What does it really mean? I mean, is it, there's the definition up there. The heartfelt wish that all beings can be free of suffering and its causes. What do you think that means? I mean, you can say those words all day long, and you can be so far away. You could be looking at somebody just thinking, I hate his guts or her. You know, it doesn't make, saying the words doesn't make any, doesn't make a bit of difference, does it? I mean, really, the words are not compassion. Those words, saying those words over and over and over again like a mantra, are not going to make us more compassionate. Yeah.
Maybe some of what it has to do with is the desire to help others, other beings or whatever, accomplish what they want to accomplish and what would benefit them with ease. That they are free from the entanglement, mm-hmm. without judgment for what's right and what's wrong.
Right. So, you know, it's hard to look at somebody who's like a famous person who seems to have money, you know, notoriety, glory, beautiful people, fun experiences, you know, all the things that we think are the goal of life. And we see people like that, and it's hard to have compassion for those people, isn't it? I mean, normally we think, oh, I'm so jealous. I wish I was like that. You know, I can't believe they're suffering. They have everything. Well, they don't have everything. I mean, some of them might. I don't know. I don't know what they have. But there's a lot of suffering from, you know, every time I pick up People magazine or Us, which comes to my office. I have to look at it every day. In the rack where the patients pick it up and read it. You know, it's like, you flip through the pages, so-and-so broke up with so-and-so, so-and-so, blah, 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 blah. All these, you know, famous people. Pardon?
Suffering Cells.
Yeah.
Cells Magazine.
Yeah, yeah. Suffering Cells, everything, really, doesn't it? Newspapers, the whole thing. So what needs to be present for compassion? And this is, I read this article. I've got it. Oh, I got it in my bag that I take to work. But anyway, it was an article on meditation, and they talked about the difference between, and we've talked about it in this class, the difference between empathy and compassion, right? Remember that conversation? Anybody? Yeah. Yeah, so what do you remember, Ron, about the difference?
Well, I remember that the point was that empathy can exhaust you, can lead to burnout, because you're actually feeling with what that person is feeling, and it's a mind where you're suffering along with that person, but you don't necessarily have any particular insight into what to do about it.
Right.
And from that perspective, maybe it's not that helpful and can be very exhausting. Whereas when you talk about compassion, you don't actually have to be feeling some particular emotion. You know, I think a lot of people kind of get the feeling that compassion necessarily has to be this kind of syrupy kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes compassion can be very stringent in the way that it manifests itself. It can be very, very forceful and might even sometimes, if you don't really understand what's happening, can even look mean sometimes because it isn't necessarily based on some cutesy emotion.
Yeah.
Because it really isn't an emotion in and of itself. It's the desire to have someone free from their suffering, whatever it takes to do that.
Yeah, it's a, you know, it's like a, it's a heartfelt wish. I like that. It's just you know, sometimes I thought about this a lot, and it's like let me say something about empathy. So one of my daughters, bless her heart, she cries in every cartoon movie, and I mean, we used to ride by roadkill, and the middle child would go, "Don't let Lily see the roadkill, because she'll cry." I'm serious. She just empathized so much with everything that all kinds of suffering. It caused her a lot of misery, and I don't necessarily think that was compassion. And that's, you know, compassion. Our, you know, Robbie and I were talking about this recently. That Geshe Daniel, who's a great, great teacher, he lived here for a few months back in the day, early 90s, I guess, early to mid 90s. And he made this comment that, you know, if you're experiencing compassion, your mind is happy. It just goes from happiness to from joy to joy, from joy to joy. So if what we're feeling is profound sadness, you know, and more delusions are arising and the mind is really unhappy because we see suffering, that's not compassion. That's something different, but it's not compassion the way in the Buddhist sense of the word. It's this heartfelt wish. Now, anybody upset when Saddam Hussein got killed? Anybody get upset about that? So, yeah.
I did.
Good.
I got upset about it.
Yeah, well, not how many people actually rejoiced? A lot of people did. A lot, Robbie did. At least he's honest. I must admit, I was really leery about rejoicing in somebody dying because I know the karmic consequences of that are not good. So, I could see how he was a bad, you know, he was. His living seemed to be causing a lot more negative karma for him and other people than him dying. So, in a sense, you know, but what I'm getting around to is if you hate somebody, which a lot of people hated him, right? Adolf Hitler, same thing. You know, the personification of evil. When those people suffer, what happens? Do we feel compassion? Uh-uh. So they're suffering, but we don't feel compassion. We actually rejoice sometimes. But when our enemies suffer, we might rejoice. So we might want to be careful about that one. So what needs to happen? What two things? Wait, before I even go there, let me just say, our basic nature is compassion. That's our basic nature. We think it's something we can cultivate it. We already have that within us. So, but we need to work on it. We need to cultivate it. So what do we need to recognize? There are two kind of nice little ingredients that we need to think about for compassion to arise. What are they? Because I just told you what they were. But not exactly. So, do you need to feel close to somebody? Don't you need to feel connected? Like when your loved ones suffer? Don't you feel compassion? I mean, more likely, anyway, you could feel empathy. But if compassion will arise, you know, naturally, if we feel close and connected. So this us and them mentality, no, doesn't work. It's this feeling of interconnectedness. You know, we talk a lot about how everybody wants to be happy and nobody wants to suffer, and we're all the same in that way. And there are lots of contemplative practices in Buddhism to help us feel connected to others, seeing all beings as our mother, having been kind to us in past lifetimes and so on. Realizing that everybody wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. We're all the same in that way. And so we can, to whatever degree we can feel connected, easy to feel connected to the people that are near and dear, isn't it? But what about the vast majority of beings who we don't even know? Those, you know, the strangers, that's the vast majority of beings. So having compassion for them, really difficult, unless we can feel connected, unless we can feel a sense of connection. And then the other thing we have to do is what? What do we have to realize? No. Suffering. We have to see that they're suffering. Because compassion is the wish that they be free of suffering and its causes. So we have to see suffering. You know, we have to recognize that we're all in this soup is called samsara. We're all caught up in as Jeffrey Hopkins describes it, as a process of uncontrolled causation, which sounds pretty wild. But we have a mind that we know, we're doing Kishi Gillick here, spin it. We know that our mind is out of control. I mean, yeah, I know if I want to go to the bathroom, I can tell myself, self, get up and go to the bathroom. Well, I got that much control, but if I try to sit down for 5 minutes and focus on my breath, I'm all over the place. Very few people have any real sense of control. And, you know, life is just going to throw us all kinds of curveballs, isn't it? We're all old enough in here to have had some interesting things, not so pleasurable things happen in life. And we all know that we're going to die. And we don't act like we're going to die, but we know it. And we know it's going to be the end of me, this sense of I that I cling to and cherish as most precious. How am I going to handle that? Am I ready for that? Am I going to be able to handle that with equanimity and peace and die with a happy mind? Or am I going to be freaking out? That's a question we all need to ask ourselves. Most of us are probably not going to do well. You know, we're all going to have to deal with getting older. And if we live long enough, we're going to have to deal with getting sick. Not being negative. Just reality, isn't it? That's part of samsara. And then the whole circle of samsara is the repetition of this cycle of uncontrolled causation again and again. Birth and death. And rebirth, and then going through, you know, you grow up, and you get, attachment arises, and this clinging, and, you know, blah, 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 and we, you know, do whatever we do in life, which is basically whatever we've done in the past, because we're creatures of habit, and we're caught in this process of uncontrolled causation. And And so having looking at Lady Gaga without going Gaga, and really understanding that she's no different than we are. She's going to go through everything that anybody else does. She struggles with her demons every day, just like we do. You know, President Obama, you know, you name it, all the famous people that we know and admire, whatever. They're all struggling. They're all going to get sick, old, and die. And they're caught in samsara. So right away, that's what all we need to know. But if we don't get samsara, if we don't get what it means to be in samsara, compassion won't arise, will it? Because we don't get suffering. We don't get that it's so deep, that it runs so deep. You know, they say there are the three kinds of suffering that we talk about in Buddhism. There's the suffering of pain, which is easy to see. You know, depression, sickness, old age, death, all those are obvious, right? Anxiety, you know, problems, job problems, health problems, you name it, suffering of pain. Then there's the suffering of change. And it's that, which Lama Zopa says is the worst suffering of all, because every time something wonderful happens, guess what? It doesn't last. It changes. And we're left with, I want more. You know, we're never satisfied. We get something and it goes out of it. It's impermanent. It's always changing. It goes out of existence. And new things come on, and we live in this constant state of craving for more pleasure. We're addicted to pleasure. But even when we get it, it doesn't last, and we're left dissatisfied. And so that dissatisfied mind, that suffering of change where pleasurable experiences, they really are pleasurable. I'm not saying, Buddhism isn't saying pleasure is not pleasure. It is pleasure. When you're having a good time, you're having a good time. When you're experiencing pleasure, you're experiencing pleasure. It's not saying that. But it doesn't last, and it leaves us wanting more, just like drinking salt water makes us thirstier and thirstier. So it doesn't give us the satisfaction we want. So that's the suffering of change. That's, you know, there's a lot that could be said about it, but it's kind of in a nutshell. But the most hard, and that's easy to see too if you think about it. It's not that hard to see. But a little bit more difficult than the suffering of pain. But the most important suffering to see if we want to develop compassion is called the suffering of pervasive suffering. Anybody know what that means? Pervasive suffering. In your readings and meditation? Anybody want to take a crack at it? I'll give you an example, because it is about samsara. It really is about samsara. It's like, I don't know if you've ever been burned, but just imagine you've got like this really wicked burn on your arm. Your whole arm is just completely seared. And even the slightest touch hurts. It just is so painful. You can't sleep, you know, and it's just miserable. And you pour, you know, if you poured hot water on it, it would just make it terrible. But you pour cool water on it, and there's some relief, and you go, God, that feels so good. But then last, because underneath there is an open wound. It's an open wound. That open wound is samsara. And that temporary respite where we go, oh, that feels so good. Those are the pleasurable experiences in samsara, but they don't last. The basic nature of samsara is unsatisfactoriness. The basic nature of... Now see, this Buddhism is not negative. It's saying we can get beyond this, okay? We're not saying this is how we're stuck, but it's saying this is what we can get beyond. Yay! We can achieve nirvana and freedom from suffering. But the basic thing, the most difficult and most important kind of suffering to see is this pervasive suffering. It's like an open wound. It's just, you get a little bit of relief when you pour the cool water on it, but the basic underlying problem is ignorance, samsara. ignorance drives samsara, doesn't it? That whole cycle of death and rebirth and all the things that happen in our lives driven by ignorance. So it's like we got to get that, and everybody is in that boat. So now we have a reason. Now we understand that we're all the same in the fact that we're all stuck in samsara. And isn't that sad? Wouldn't it be nice if everyone could be free from samsara? So if we have a sense of this most profound kind of suffering, just even a sense of it, and a feeling of connectedness and closeness to others, then we have the basic ingredients to cultivate compassion.
Yeah.
But isn't it that ability to recognize that other beings are suffering, that seems to be that connector for everyone, that you don't have to know the person on the corner who's panhandling in extreme heat. I mean, to see that, and it was getting back, I had an idea about empathy, that, you know, I'd have a thought of empathy and then compassion for that person, but to recognize suffering and see that and realize that it's across all sentient beings, and, you know, that seems to be the common link that connects us, whether you actually know that person or being or not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we talk about the six realms of samsara, but they're right here on this earth, aren't they? They're right here in Raleigh. You know, the God realm, I always joke about the inside the belt line. I'm probably some people here from inside the belt line. But anyway, sorry. You know, that's the God realm, okay, for us. You know, then there's this jealous God realm, which is the so-called jealous gods, asuras, this is a Sanskrit term, but they are the beings that like want what the gods have. They're jealous, constantly jealous. And then there's the human realm, and then there's the animal realm, which we can see, and then there are two more realms. One's the hungry ghost, or the there's another name for it. Pretas. And then there's the hell realms, which doesn't sound like a lot of fun. These are, the lower realms are the joyless realms. We call them euphemistically the joyless realms. But, you know, in our mind, I mean, we know people that have everything sensually that they can want. But guess what? They're still caught in samsara, aren't they? You go look at the big circle right outside the door. There's the painting of the wheel of life, and right in there at the top are the God realm beings, and they're still inside. They're still caught in samsara. So even if you live inside the Beltline, you're still in samsara. And then the jealous gods, and the humans, and the animals, and the hungry ghosts, and the hell beings, you know. We know people that live like animals, don't we? We know people that live like that. That just basically, live a very kind of instinctive lives, just following instincts and doing. We know people like that. And the hungry ghost realm, the big feature of theirs, their mentality is miserliness. And in the hell beings, the biggest feature of their mind, the biggest feature of their mind is like anger. Anger. And we know people that are sort of, their basic nature is angry. And how many people got angry today? Even for a second. Well, you were in the hell realm. You know? And then your mind was pervaded by closed-minded stupidity, you were in the animal realm. And then, if you were jealous of somebody, you were in the jealous God realm. And then, when everything was going great, and you know, we cycle mentally in these realms every day, and we know people that live their lives this way. And then, this is how it's going to go. We're all caught in, and it's all equally suffering. The people that have it look like they have it made. It's just because they got enough cold water to keep the wound, the pain of the wound is temporarily relieved, but it won't last. They can't keep it going. They cannot keep it going. They're in samsara. So it's so important for us to get that, you know, that we're all equally suffering. Even though some have more than others, the guy, the panhandler on the curb might be the happiest person around, you know? He might be. You know, and the person driving down the street in their nice, you know, Mercedes convertible, there's a story, I don't want to get too far off track here, but there's a story of this wise man who went to this kingdom, and he was looking for the poorest person in the kingdom. He had like a bunch of gold, and he was going to give it to the poorest person in the kingdom. So he went around the kingdom and talked to everybody, supposedly, and checked everybody out. And he went to the king, and he gave the gold to the king. He said, "You're the poorest person here." Because even though you have a lot, you're never satisfied. You always want more. So kind of interesting. So compassion, again, requires connection and awareness of suffering for it to rise. Yeah.
So when we were talking about pervasive suffering, I tend to try to think, I think of pervasive suffering, it's everything. Everything I do, everything I experience, my whole world, my whole life is probably pervasive suffering, and for everyone around me. And it's the, and we're all in cyclic existence, which is all pervasive suffering, and the idea seems to be it, changing my mind to create less suffering and see things differently so that we have the positive virtues and the perfections to create a better mindset so we know how to interpret things so that I'm not my goal is to interpret things so that I'm not suffering. Because it's all here. It's all how I think of it and look at it, and in that pervasive suffering. But it's so deep and so ingrained, and the only way to get past that is through the meditation and nirvana, enlightenment.
Mm-hmm. Developing.
Long road.
Yeah, I wish there was a pill for it. I really do. The Dalai Lama says if anybody can come up for a pill to get you straight to nirvana, he said, "Bring it on! I want it. You know, it's work. It's hard work."
And I'm sure I'm loaded with ignorance when I say, I like it when I can recognize, boom, just like that. Oh my gosh, what did you just do? Or, you know, that moment, or when I'm meditating. Oh, you're off there. Bring it back, mm-hmm. And it feels like an accomplishment.
It is an accomplishment. It's like,
but it's all
like
still
you went to the gym, you know, you did a curl with 50 pounds with your mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's how we grow in our spiritual practice, little bit by little bit. Moderate effort over time. That's my motto. You know, I've seen so many, I mean, Robbie's been around this Buddhist center a long time, and you know, sometimes we're amused about this, but it's been, you just, over the years, I mean, thousands of people have come through the door, probably. Pretty sure thousands, wouldn't you say? And most people don't stay. And, you know, it's, pardon?
What?
Because it's difficult.
It's good that they didn't stay, you know, we wouldn't have room for it. But, but it's this doesn't work for everybody. This approach that we are responsible for our own happiness and our suffering, and that we can actually do something about it. So let me just say a couple more things about compassion, and then we'll do Vajrasattva again. But we talk about compassion, and it's actually, if you almost all the what is it, the four immeasurables. Let me read it. It says, may all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. Now, when you hear that, what do you think? May all sentient beings be... Do you think that includes you? You probably don't, do you? We don't think it includes us. It's others. May they be free. But it's also us. We are part of all sentient beings. So may we be suffering, free of suffering and its causes. So having compassion for this one is like, I asked this great Geshe from in India, Geshe Sonam Rinchen, and I said, where is compassion for yourself in Tibetan Buddhism? You know, I was kind of trying to debate him in a class of a bunch of people, and he you know, like I couldn't find it, and I was looking because I thought it was important. And he said, well, that's the same thing as renunciation, you know, the term we use. It's the determination. It's like, but compassion for yourself, I think, leads, maybe this is wrong, but it seems like at some point you go, gosh, I want to be free of suffering. Or as Geshe Gelug would say, I want to be free of complications. I'll go for that. I want to be free of that. And so this determination to be free is what is this determination to be free is what we call, you know, generally called the first step on the path. We use the word renunciation, but determination to be free of what? So we have to come to terms with our own suffering, don't we? I want to be free of suffering. Well, if I don't think I'm suffering, if I think life is hunky-dory and I'm not stuck in samsara and the only thing missing is the next high and the next girlfriend and the next vacation and the next big purchase and the next this and blah, 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 whatever we think is the source of temporal happiness in this world. I mean, look at how our culture thinks and how it tends to push people to think, that's not going to get it. We have to come to terms with the fact that we're suffering. We have all three kinds of suffering: pain and change, and most importantly, pervasive suffering. And then we have compassion for ourselves. May I be free of suffering and its causes, right? And then I go, I'm determined to be free. Like my hair is on fire, literally. I mean, they say when you have this realization, it's like you have this day and night, all you can think about is freeing yourself from the suffering of samsara. That's renunciation. That's the rocket fuel for practice. Okay? And it is having compassion for ourselves. So now let's segue into this thing called that I think Bodhisattva is about forgiveness. And who needs to be forgiven? Are we forgiving our ex-spouses? Or the ones we live with, for that matter. We need to forgive this one. Bodhisattva practice is all about healing, forgiving ourselves. The end result of Bodhisattva practice is we bring to mind, negative actions of body and speech and mind as much as we can while before we do the practice, and even during the practice these things might come up, and we train ourselves through doing this visualization to let go of the negative charge of having done something that really harmed us and maybe somebody else. But we have this this negative charge, and it may be you cheated on your spouse or your girlfriend some time in the past, and or you killed somebody accidentally, could happen, or you stole something, or you lied to somebody. Whatever, we all have stories, and we all have a long story in our life, and we hold these grudges against ourselves, and it just keeps us small and limits our spiritual potential. So when we do Vajrasattva practice, Vajrasattva is like a roto-rooter. It goes down and brings up this negative stuff, and then we get to deal with it. We get to see it for what it is. It's just stuff. It's just a story. It has no substance. It's completely empty. So based on compassion for ourselves, you know, we can do Vajrasattva practice. And the end result of Vajrasattva practice is we let go of not the memory, because it's not necessarily good to remember, to forget the things that we did that were unskillful. Because if we can remember them, we might, you know, and the negative outcome, we probably won't do it again. So we're not trying to like blank our memory out. We're trying to let go of the negative charge around it, what I'd call the negative karma from having done that. So, and the end result of letting go of that negativity toward ourselves is forgiveness. Like, you forgive yourself for not being perfect. You forgive yourself for having done stupid stuff and hurt others and hurt yourself. That's what Vajrasattva is really all about. So I think it's a good way to think about it. Even though you don't see the word forgiveness in the text, hardly ever. But isn't that what happens with forgiveness? When you think about it, if you forgive somebody, or somebody forgives you, you know, isn't there a sense of letting go? Yeah, there's a sense of letting go. So what we're trying to do is bring these negative actions, not from not only this life, but countless lifetimes. So this is, it helps to think in a big way, because you may say, well, I've never killed, and I've never stolen, and I've never committed adultery, and I've never lied, you know, I'm not a liar, and all this kind of stuff, and just tell yourself, but we've done everything in past lifetimes, countless times. We are not saints yet, but we have the potential to be. So let's do Vajrasattva. I might have to borrow. Oh, I got it. So next week we'll do the quiz, the final exam. Just kidding. So we're going to read this whole thing. At Lama Zopadid. And then we'll do the Vajrasattva mantra 21 times. I think since I probably told people they could, you know, you could do the short mantra Om Vajrasattva Hum. Geshe-la says Om Vajrasattva Hum is the short version of it. So you can do the short version. But I think we'll do it out loud. That's okay. We'll do it out loud. We'll do the long one 21 times out loud, but we'll try to speed it up. We won't do it to that little tune. And by the way, you can read the definition of the mantra on page 15. But the gist of it is that we're purifying our negative karma. Okay? So you don't have to remember, you don't have to know exactly the meaning of a mantra when you're saying it. For example, you know, supposedly Om Mani Padme Hum means hail to the jewel and the lotus. What does that mean? You know, how does that help you? But the mantra is meant to cultivate compassion. So if you make connections, say Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, that mantra is to cultivate compassion. So again, it's not crucial that you are aware of the exact meaning of every word of the mantra. You just say the mantra, understanding that this is purifying your negative karma. Okay? So let's skip to the power of regret, because we've pretty much done the refuge and bodhicitta part. So first recall the definition. I'm on page 9, by the way. The bottom of page 9, I think. Is it in that? Okay. First recall the definition of negative karma. Any action that results in suffering. Usually an action motivated by ignorance, attachment, and aversion. This is really important, because the crucial factor in karma is our motivation. And since how we know that something is negative is that the long-term consequence of that action leads to suffering. Well, the long-term consequence of a lot of the things that we do in this lifetime won't even ripen in this lifetime. So how are we going to know it's negative? We know it because it's motivated by ignorance, attachment, and aversion. So that's how we know in the moment if an action is virtuous or non-virtuous. We know our motive. Is it selfish? Is it self-centered? Is it attachment? Is it aversion? It will always lead to suffering. So that's the stuff that we need to purify. Almost every action I do, 24 hours a day, is motivated by worldly concern, attachment to the comfort of this life. It is like this from birth to death. This life has been like that from beginningless rebirths. Nearly every action I've ever created has been non-virtuous, the cause of suffering. Not only that, but continuously been breaking my pratimoksha, bodhisattva, and tantric vows. Worst of all, I've created the heckiest negative karmas in relation to my virtuous friend, getting angry at them, generating wrong views, having non-devotional thoughts towards them, harming their holy body, disobeying their advice. Having these negative imprints on my mental continuum is unbearable. It's as if I'd swallowed a lethal poison. I must practice the antidote right away and purify all this negative karma immediately without a second's delay. And this way generate strong feelings of urgency and regret. So it's good before you go any further to particularly if you're doing this practice at home, to try to go through the 10 non-virtuous actions or just whatever comes to mind and try to think of things that you've done in the past that you really wished you hadn't done that created negative karma. And try to specifically bring them to mind. Generate sincere, I think the Catholic word is contrition, regret. Sincere regret. Okay, now we're remembering impermanence and death. Many people my age or younger have died. It's a miracle that I'm still alive and have this incredible opportunity to purify my negative karma. Death is certain, but its time is most uncertain. If I were to die right now, I would definitely be born in the lower realms. Because I could not practice Dharma there, I would remain in the lower realms for countless eons. Therefore, how unbelievably fortunate I am to be able to purify my negative karma right now without even a second's delay by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. Now we'll read this part. But I am not practicing this Vajrasattva purification for myself alone. The purpose of my life is to release all hell beings, pretas, animals, humans, asuras, suras, and intermediate state beings from all their suffering and its causes and lead them to unsurpassed enlightenment. In order to do this, I must first reach enlightenment myself. Therefore, I must purify all my negative karma immediately by practicing the Vajrasattva meditation recitation. Now, I'll read this while you just try to do the visualization as best you can. And like I said, you know, for most of us, a white light above your head is a pretty good, you know, pretty good. But, you know, if you can visualize, you know, God, yourself, a father and mother, or just imagine that you are visualizing them above the crown of your head, that's makes it, the clearer the visualization, the more powerful the practice is. And if you can see, this is like the most helpful thing for me in this practice, is to see that the nature of my mind and Vajrasattva's mind and my guru's mind, my teacher's mind, they're of the same nature. Purity. Emptiness. Unlimited potential. And Vajrasattva's, you know, and it's, if you have a guru or teacher who's empowered you into the practice of Vajrasattva, seeing your teacher as inseparable from Vajrasattva is also very helpful for your mind. So what we're going to do is construct this visualization of Vajrasattva above the crown of her head. You're sitting on, you know, we'll visualize a lotus and various discs. And you want to imagine that Vajrasattva is completely made of light. Not solid, but like a hologram. And not just some inanimate object like these statues behind us, but actually an enlightened, like a living presence of an enlightened being above our head, but not solid, completely made of light. And you want to feel that, you know, we're in the presence of Buddha Vajrasattva, whose only wish is to help us purify our mind. All right, above the crown of my head, seated upon a lotus and a moon seat, are Vajrasattva, father and mother. Their bodies are white. Each one has one face and two arms. He holds a dorji and a bell. She, a curved knife and a skull cup. They are embracing each other. The father is adorned with 6 mudras and the mother with 5. He sits in the Vajra posture, she in the lotus. Vajrasattva is my guru, the holy mind of all the Buddhas, the Dharmakaya, who out of his unbearable compassion, who embraces me and all other sentient beings, appears in this form to purify me and all others. In this way, your mind is transformed into guru devotion, the root of all blessings and realizations of the path to enlightenment. Now, that may not mean much to you, but I'll say it again. In this way, your mind is transformed into devotion for your teacher, for your guru, the root of all blessings and realizations of the path to enlightenment. On the moon disk of Vajrasattva's heart stands a hum, H-U-M. This is a seed syllable. Sitting at the center of the moon disk of his heart. And you can visualize usually the male figure, Vajrasattva, the father, is the one that you visualize has the hum in his heart. But that's generally how it's done. And it's encircled by a garland of the 100-syllable mantra. Okay? And each, these 100 syllables are sitting around the edge of this moon disk. And as we say the mantra, this is way more than we can probably visualize, but you know, you visualize that each as you say the mantra, each syllable lights up and around the edge of the mantra, and light and nectar flow down from the whole mantra. So a powerful stream of white nectar flows from the hum and the mantra garland, and I am cleansed of all sickness, spirit harm, negative karma, and obscurations. So get where we are now. We've got above the crown of the head is a moon disk. I mean, is a lotus, a sun, and a moon disk, all made of light. Each thing has symbolic meaning. Then Vajrasattva, father and mother, right? And at his heart is a moon disk with a hum at the H-U-M at the center, hum. And then around the edge of this moon disk are the letters of the 100-syllable mantra. And as we say the mantra, this light and nectar come from that, from the mantra, I mean from this moon disk, and really from the mantra and the hum, comes down through his body, through the lower part of his body, and enters the crown of our head. And the first visualization is to purify our body. So we're going to do it 7 times. And as we do it, imagine that that light and nectar come in and purifies all the negative karma of killing and stealing and adultery and anything else that we might have done unskillful with our body in this and former lifetimes. We just imagine that all of that stuff goes out the lower part of our body, like we're being, like it's being flushed, like tar, some negativity, all in the form of, you know, scorpions and snakes and whatever icky things you can think of. And it's going out the lower part of the body and disappearing in the earth below us. So we do it. So the first 7 recitations are purifying the body, and the light and nectar are completely purifying the body. Okay? We'll do that first visualization first as we say this 100-syllable mantra. And again, if you don't want to say it, you can say Om Vajrasattva Hum, Om Vajrasattva Hum, Om Vajrasattva Hum, Om Vajrasattva Hum. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dino Patita Dido Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sarasiri Me Prayaja Savakama Suchami Shidam Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Kajavada Bhami Majavada Bhava Mahasamaya Sabha Ahom Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dino Patita Dido Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sarvajiti Me Prayacha Savakama Suchami Chidam Sriyam Guru Hom Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Gaja Vajra Mame Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sabha Ahom Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Tino Patita Tino Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anavata Me Bhava Sarvajiti Me Prayacha Kama Suchami Chidam Sriyam Guru Hom Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Gaja Vajra Mame Mucha Vada Bava Mahasamaya Sava Ahom Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dino Pa Dino Me Bava Sutokaya Me Bava Supokaya Me Bava Anavata Me Bava Sarasiri Me Prayacha Sucha Me Chidam Sriyam Kuraham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Gaja Vada Mame Mucha Vada Bava Mahasamaya Sava Ahom Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Tino Patita Tino Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anavata Me Bhava Sarvasiri Me Prayaja Sarvakama Suchami Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Gada Vajra Mami Bhuta Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sabha Ahum Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Tino Patita Tino Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anavata Me Bhava Sarvatire Me Prayacha Savakama Suchami Kriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Gadra Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Tino Patita Tino Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Anavata Me Bhava Sarvatire Me Prayacha Kama Suchami Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Gaja Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sava Ahum Pe. So just visualize continuing light and nectar completely purifying your body of all diseases, all the negative karma, everything that would cause future suffering of your body, completely purified. Now the next visualization is kind of like if you had a cup that was dirty on the inside, but the dirt didn't stick to the side of the cup, and you poured water in the cup, and then as you poured the water, the dirt and the crud would begin to float up to the surface of the cup. As you kept pouring it, eventually the pollution in the cup, the dirt, would flow over the sides of the cup and out. And this is purifying the negative karma of speech. As the light and nectar enter our body, and it fills us up from the bottom up, and then we imagine that all this negativity, which can visualize as like white, as a sort of like black, you know, whatever, this negative karma, anything you can think of that's unpleasant, you can imagine flowing out of the, you know, your eye sockets and your ear and your mouth and your nose, all the orifices in your head, and completely disappearing. And you, as we say it seven more times, we'll visualize that. Do that visualization as best you can. Again, all this light and nectar is coming from Guru Vajrasattva, who's inseparable from our own guru, our own teacher. So light and nectar entering the crown of our head, filling us from the bottom up, purifying all the negative karma of lying, slander, harsh and frivolous talk, anything that we can imagine that we've said or done that was negative in this life, and former lifetimes. We want to feel like we're letting it go. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manopalaya Vajrasattva Dinopatita Dido Me Bhava Sutukaya Me Bhava Supukaya Me Bhava Anavata Me Bhava Zawajiri Me Prayaja Sawakama Sucha Me Tiram Sriyam Guruham Ha 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 Bhagavan Sawatata Gadra Vajra Mami Mucha Vajra Bhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manopalaya Vajrasattva Dinopatita Dido Me Bhava Sutukaya Me Bhava Supukaya Me Bhava Anavata me bhava, sawajiri me payacha, kamasucha me, jidam suyam kuruham, ha 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 ho, bhagavan, sawatata gadra, badra mami mucha, badra bhava masa, maya sapa, ahom pe, om badra sapa samaya, balaya. Vadino patita, diro me bawa, sutukaya me bawa, supukaya me bawa, anarata me bawa, sawasiri me payacha, kama sucha me, siddham suyam kuruham, ha 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 ho, bhagavan, sawatata kata, vadra mami mutta, vadra bawa, mahasamaya, sapa, ahom pe. Sava samaya manabalaya Padra Safa Dino Patita Dino Mebawa Bawa Anarata Mebawa Siri Bepaya Jan Sawa Kama Suja Me Siram Sriam Kuruham Ha 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 Bhagavan Sawa Tatakadra Vadra Mami Mutsa Vadra Bawa Mas Maya Sapa Ahum Pe Om Sabadino Patita Dino Mebawa Kaya meba, anarata meba, sava siddhi meparacha, sucha me, siddham sriyam kuruham, ha 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 ho, bhagavan, tagadha vadra bhava mutha, pain. Vajrasattva samaya manupalaya Vajrasattva dino patita Dino me bhava Sutokaya me bhava Supokaya me bhava Anarata me bhava Savasiri me bhaya Sokama sucha me Chinam suryam kuruham Ha 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 ho bhagavan Savatata gadra vadra mami mucha Vadra bhava mahasamaya sapa ahum pe Vajrasattva samaya manupalaya Vajrasattva dino patita Dino me bhava Sutokaya me bhava supukaya me bhava anarata me bhava sawasiri me payacha kamasucha me siddham sriyam kuruham ha 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 ho bhagavan sawatata gadra vadra mami mucha vadra bhava mahasamaya sapa ahum pe. And feel that your negative karma of speech, not only all the negative stuff that you've said in this lifetime, but countless former lifetimes, completely purified due to the kindness of Guru Vajrasattva. Now, the last visualization is purifying the mind. And as the light and nectar enter the crown of our head and our body, it's like the darkness of ignorance is disappears, and the body's like completely filled with light, you know, like completely lit up with this purifying energy, and so all of our ignorance is dispelled as we recite the mantra again 7 more times and doing this visualization. Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Dira Me Bhava Tutukaya Me Bhava Subhukaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Sova Siddhi Me Prayaja Kama Sucha Me Siddham Shriyam Kuraham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatata Gadra Vajrabhami Mucha Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahum Pe Om Bhadrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Bhadrasapa Dino Patita Dira Me Bhava Tutukaya Me Baba, Sobokayo me Baba, Anarata me Baba, Savatiri me Payacha, Savakama Sujami, Sidam Sriam Kuruham, Ha 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 Ho, Bhagavan, Savatata Gadra Vadra Mami, Mutra Badra Baba, Mahasamaya Saba Ahom Pe, Om Badra Safa Samaya, Manapalaya, Badra Safa Dino Patita, Dido me Baba, Sutokayo me Baba, Sobokayo me Baba, Anarata me Baba, Savatiri me Payacha, Savakama Sujami, Sriyam Kuraham, Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan, Savatata Gadra, Vajra Mami Mutra, Vajra Bhava, Mahasamaya, Sapa Ahum Pe, Om Vajra Sapa Samaya, Manapalaya, Vajra Sapa Dino Patita, Dino Me Bhava, Sutokaya Me Bhava, Supakaya Me Bhava, Anarata Me Bhava, Savasiri Me Payacha, Savakama Sujami, Sriyam Kuraham, Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan, Savatata Gadra, Vajra Mami Mutra, Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahom Pe Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita Dino Me Bhava Sutokaya Me Bhava Supokaya Me Bhava Anarata Me Bhava Savasiri Me Prayacha Savakama Sujami Siddham Sriyam Kuruham Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan Savatate Kadra Vajramami Mucha Vajrabhava Mahasamaya Sapa Ahom Pe Om Vajrasapa Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasapa Dino Patita, Dido Me Bhava, Sutokaya Me Bhava, Supokaya Me Bhava, Arata Me Bhava, Savasiri Me Prayacha, Savakama Sujami, Priyam Kuruham, Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan, Savatata Gadra, Vajramami Mucha, Vajrabhava, Mahasamaya Sapa, Ahum Pe, Om Vajrasapa Samaya, Manapalaya, Vajrasapa Dino Patita, Dido Me Bhava, Sutokaya Me Bhava, Supokaya Me Baba, Anarata me Baba, Savasiri me Paisa, Savakama Suchami, Sidam Sriam Kuruham, Ha 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 Ho Bhagavan, Savatata Gadra, Vajramami Mutsa, Badra Bawa, Mahasamaya, Sava Ahom Pe. Now feel that all your negative karma of your mind, you know, the principal delusions are greed, hatred, and ignorance. The three poisonous minds, completely, you know, let go of all that negative karma created in this lifetime and all our former lifetimes. Now we'll go to page, we'll read, read page 16. From the crown of my head, Guru Vajrasattva says, Son of the race, your negativities, obscurations, and broken and damaged pledges have been completely purified. Generate strong faith, they have been completely purified, just as Guru Vajrasattva has said. So we want to pause and actually feel that you've let go of, and in a sense, forgiven yourself, you know? For all of this stuff that we've done. The memorable stuff anyway. But also in past lifetimes. Just let go of it. We've let go of it. We've been purified. Then the power of refraining from creating negativities again. Now, some teachers, not everybody says this, but some teachers think, like, this is the most important aspect of the four planet powers, is promising to never do this stuff again. So, you know, this is a crucial part of the purification practice. That's what I'm saying. Before Guru Vajrasattva, I vow never again to commit those negative actions from which I can easily abstain, and not to commit for a day, an hour, or at least a few seconds those negative actions from which I find it difficult to abstain. Now, Guru Vajrasattva is extremely pleased with your pledge. Vajrasattva, father and mother, melt into light and dissolve through the crown of your head into you. Your body, speech, and mind become inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's holy body, speech, and mind. So you kind of want to reflect on that, that your body, speech, and mind are now completely pure. Completely pure. And try to generate some feeling for that. That you've actually, you know, accomplished something. Using your own mind, you purified your mind. So your mind is inseparably one with Guru Vajrasattva's pure, holy body, speech, and mind. Now the dedication. In emptiness there is no I, creator of negative karma. There is no action of creating negative karma. There is no negative karma created. Place your mind in that emptiness for a little while. In this way, look at all phenomena as empty. They do not arise from their own side. With its awareness, emptiness, dedicate the merits. Due to all the merits of the three times collected by me, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, all the sentient beings, which appear to be real, but which are empty, may I, which appears to be real, but is empty, achieve Guru Vajrasattva's enlightenment, which appears to be real, but is empty, and lead all sentient beings who appear to be real, but are totally empty, to that enlightenment, which appears to be real, but is empty, by myself alone, which appears to be real, but is also totally empty, non-existent from there. May the precious bodhicitta, the source of all happiness and success, self and all other sentient beings, be generated within my own mind and in the minds of all sentient beings without even a second's delay. May that which has been generated be increased. May I and all other sentient beings have Mama Tsongkhapa as our direct guru all our lifetimes, never be separated for even a second from the pure path as greatly praised by the conqueror Buddhas, and actualize the complete path, three principal paths, two stages of highest yoga tantra, the root of which is guru devotion, in our minds as quickly as possible. Joseph the Brave and Manjushri and Samantabhadra realize things as they are. I dedicate all these virtues in the best way that I may follow after them. Whatever dedication the three-time victorious ones, Gandha Bliss, have admired as best, in the same way I also perfectly dedicate all these roots of virtue so that I may perform good works. Okay, so that was our dedication for the night too. And so next week, I'm going to do a little bit more didactic stuff, but we'll also do a little bit of a, we have to do some, I think there's one sadhana we have to do, so we'll work on, we'll try to squeeze it in at some point. So thank you.
Very quickly, I have an answer to Louise's question about the final completion certificate for DB. So here's what it says on the website. When you've received a completion certificate for each of the first 13 modules, by completing all the requirements for these modules, and when you've also completed all the practices for module 14, you can receive an overall Discovering Buddhism final completion certificate designed and signed by Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Now, we have not been handing out these module completion certificates but I have them. So here's what I'm proposing. Those of you, I know there's some in here who are going for the certificate, bring these in next time, okay? And I'm going to generate for you all of these, mind, and all of these certificates of completion for the modules you've done. We'll get these two guys to sign them, and then you'll have these completed. And then when you do module 14, you'll join the ranks of Steve Smith. That would be nice. We'll invite her. We'll invite her to do that. Oh yeah, yeah. Because there's no class. It lists all the requirements. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you all. And if you want to stick around and move cushions, we'd love to have your company. Thank you.